It would be a lengthy prayer. She thanked the Lord for everything good, including me, her new friend. She prayed for those who were sick and those who might become so. She prayed for rain and sun and health and humility and patience. And though I began to worry about the food getting cold, I was mesmerized by her voice. Her cadence was slow, with thought given to each word. Her diction was perfect, every consonant treated equally, every comma and period honored. I had to peek to make sure I wasn't dreaming. I had never heard such speech from a Southern black, or a Southern white for that matter. I peeked again. She was talking to her Lord, and her face was perfectly content. For a few seconds, I actually forgot about the food. She squeezed my hands as she petitioned the Almighty with eloquence that came only from years of practice. She quoted Scripture, the King James Version for sure, and it was a bit odd to hear her use words like thou and thine and whither and goest. But she knew precisely what she was doing. In the clutches of this very holy woman, I had never felt closer to God. I couldn't imagine such a lengthy devotional over a table crowded with 8 children. Something told me, though, that when Kalia Ruffin prayed, everybody got still. Finally, she ended with a flourish, a long burst in which she managed to appeal for the forgiveness of her sins, which I presumed were few and far between, and for my own, which, well, if she only knew. She released me and began removing lids from bowls. The first contained a pile of pork chops smothered in a sauce that included, among many ingredients, onions and peppers. More steam hit my face, and I wanted to eat with my fingers. In the second, there was a mound of yellow corn sprinkled with green peppers, still hot from the stove. There was boiled okra, which she explained as she prepared to serve, she preferred over the fried variety because she worried about too much grease in her diet. She was taught to batter and fry everything, from tomatoes to pickles, and she had come to realize that this was not altogether healthy. There were butter beans, likewise unbattered and unfried, but rather cooked with ham hocks and bacon. There was a platter of small red tomatoes covered with pepper and olive oil. She was one of the very few cooks in town who used olive oil, she said, as she continued her narrative. I was hanging on every word as my large plate was being tended to. A son in Milwaukee shipped her good olive oil because such was unheard of in Clanton. She apologized because the tomatoes were store-bought. Hers were still on the vine and wouldn't be ready until summertime. The corn, okra, and butter beans had been canned from her garden last August. In fact, the only real fresh vegetables were the collard greens, or spring greens as she called them. A large black skillet was hidden in the center of the table, and when she pulled a napkin off it, there were at least 4 pounds of hot cornbread. She removed a huge wedge, placed it in the center of my plate, and said, "There, that will get you started." I had never had so much food placed in front of me. The feast began. I tried to eat slowly, but it was impossible. I had arrived with an empty stomach, and somewhere in the midst of the competing aromas and the beauty of the table and the rather long-winded blessing and the careful description of each dish, I had become thoroughly famished. I packed it in, and she seemed content to do the talking. Her garden had produced most of the meal. She and Esau grew 4 types of tomatoes, butter beans, string beans, black-eyed peas, crowder peas, cucumbers, eggplants, squash, collards, mustard greens, turnips, Vidalia onions, yellow onions, green onions, cabbage, okra, new red potatoes, russet potatoes, carrots, beets, corn, green peppers, cantaloupes, 2 varieties of watermelon, and a few other things she couldn't recall at the moment. The pork chops were provided by her brother, who still lived on the old family place out in the country. He killed 2 hogs for them every winter, and they stuffed their freezer. In return, they kept him in fresh vegetables. "We don't use chemicals," she said, watching me gorge myself. "Everything is natural."
It certainly tasted like it.
"But it's all put up, you know, from the winter. It'll taste better in the summertime, when we pick and eat it just a few hours later. Will you come back then, Mr. Trainer?" I grunted and nodded, and somehow managed to convey the message that I would return any time she wanted. "Would you like to see my garden?" she asked. I nodded again, both jaws filled to capacity. "Good. It's out back. I'll pick you some lettuce and greens. They're coming in nicely."
"Wonderful," I managed to utter.
"I figure a single man like you needs all the help he can get. How'd you know I was single?"
I took a gulp of tea. It could have served as dessert, there was so much sugar in it.
"Folks are talking about you. Word gets around. There are not too many secrets in Clanton on both sides of the tracks."
"What else have you heard?"
"Let's see. You rent from the Hokuts. You come from up north."
"Memphis."
"That far?"
"It's an hour away."
"Just joking. One of my daughters went to college there." I had many questions about her children, but I was not ready to take notes. Both hands were busy eating. At some point, I called her Miss Kalia instead of Miss Ruffin.
"It's Callie," she said. "Miss Callie will do just fine.